Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo 3.0 Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of BulkHunter.com in North Carolina, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and Conjurman of ConjurmanConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week's special guest in the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers is John St. Germain of johnstgermain.com in Knoxville, Tennessee, bringing us today's topic on mediumship training. They will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, root work as defined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooist of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man. Miss Catherine.
Hi. Thank you, Reverend James. Back so soon.
Surprise.
Surprise.
For those of you who follow us regularly, James has been our announcer for quite a while, and then he retired. Papa Newt, who had been our most long-time announcer, came back for 1 week. And now Papa Newt is off at a psychic fair, and James is substituting for Papa Newt. And I'm so glad we're all just one happy family here and that, you know, we can do that. So thank you, Reverend James. All right. But Papa Newt will be back again next week. All right. I'm just going to quickly give a couple of announcements. Number one, maybe you have or maybe you have not ever heard me talk about a domain I started years and years ago with nothing on it called porcelainmadness.com.
Yay!
Porcelainmadness.com. It's one of those things, you know, we're sitting around one day and going, oh, shit, I ought to own that domain. So I do own porcelainmadness.com, thanks to Nagashiva, who went out and snagged it for me right away. And then it just sort of sat. And so porcelainmadness.com is going to be increasing in its complexity. But right now you can go there and there's one page with a whole bunch of porcelain madness on it, if you are the kind of person who even knows what porcelain madness is. I had a great, great, great uncle who collected porcelain, and when asked about it, he said, I suffer from porcelain madness. And so that was a family joke. There are many people in my family who suffer from porcelain madness. We don't know why. It's shiny, it's heavy, it's something, it's whatever. So my porcelain madness mostly takes the form of restaurant ware. So if any of you are interested, you can go see it. It is available to the public. It is not a Patreon page. It's just a page. You'll be seeing more additions to it because I have recently been using the space between the Saturday announcement of the radio show and the Sunday announcement of the radio show to do promotions for the campaign of Kamala Harris. And now that that is over and she has lost and Trump has won, I'm going back to posting pictures of porcelain or flowers, or I also for a while was doing dream books, and I got together a big dream book bibliography, but now we're going to go through a run of porcelain for a while. So Phyllis Margaret Gabor says, I remember the Porcelain Madness show. Yes, yes. Well, anyway, so for those asking, you know, everyone's been sort of very gloom and doomy, calling me up on the phone, you know, how are you doing, you know, about the election. I think I must just be a person who doesn't get sad very often. I'm going, I'm fine, you know, on to the next round. I've been through this before. You ain't lived through nothing if you didn't live through Richard Nixon. I mean, my God, that was pretty bad.
Nixon, Reagan, Bush, Jr.
That's right. That's it. That's the litany of really bad presidents who lied a lot. And I have to say, see, Reagan, I wanted to like Reagan. I mean, you know, God, the guy was an actor. But here we are again with an actor. We have a problem with that. I mean, you know, the only really good actor ever elected to office, in my opinion, was Jesse Ventura. But he's a wrestler, which is a form of acting. Anyway, I liked him. He was good. All right, so how I'm doing is okay, but I have to read these announcements, and then I'm going to turn this over to Conjurman, and he's going to say hi. So our announcements, real quick. Hoodoo Psychics on Mondays. A contest is put up. You can win a free 15-minute reading. And you do the math at $3.99 a minute. That's a good amount of money you just won. And the winner is given this chance to have a 15-minute reading with any member of Hoodoo Psychics, and the winners are announced on Wednesday. If you are not entering this contest, you're a fool, because it's free. And the place to enter is on Facebook, or you can enter on Instagram. And be sure that if you use Instagram, go over and find Hoodoo Psychics on Instagram. They need some more love over on Instagram. They're doing pretty well on Facebook, but they need some more love on Instagram. All right. Last week's Hoodoo Psychics contest winner for a reading at Hoodoo Psychics was Teresa M. LaFonte. So congratulations, Teresa. Deacon Millett will have contacted you, I'm sure. Get your free reading. If you want to choose me, you can, or you can choose any of the other Hoodoo Psychics. Then we have the winner for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour Facebook Fridays contest. So this is a collection of books that was called the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church Book Special, comprised of the following books. And there were so many books that we only had one winner. In fact, listing the books will take longer than naming the winner. The books were The Art of Hoodoo Candle Magic by Catherine Ironwood and Mikhail Strabo, An Artist Among the Spirits by Reverend Dr. John St. Germain, who is our guest here on the show, which is really cool, and it's about spiritualism. It's a great book. Crystal Magic by Reverend Dr. John St. Germain, him again.
Woo-hoo.
Deliverance by Kai Armand. Hoodoo Bible Magic by Miss Michael and Professor Porterfield. Hoodoo Food by the Ladies Auxiliary of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. Hoodoo Shrines and Altars by Miss Phoenix LaFay. And Secrets of the Crystal Silence League by Claude Alexander Conlon. And the winner was Ian Carcosa. And we've messaged Ian from our Facebook page that they've won now that the contest has ended. And they should contact the page by clicking message. And Ian, don't send anybody any, you know, stuff that spammers want, like your credit card, your social security number. If anyone does that to you, it's not Lucky Mojo, and you must report it to Facebook immediately. We've kind of gotten rid of most of that spam, I think, but it keeps on coming back when your guard is down. It's phishing. They're trying to get people's information. So anyway, that's it. And all we will want, Ian, will be your mailing address. No money, no credit card numbers. Okay. All right. That's it for me. How about you, Conjurman? What's new in your little part of the world?
You know, doing well. Not the happiest of weeks, but we move on, and we prepare for the future. Some of us expected the worst to some degree. Some part of me is you know, somewhat assured that I think Trump is going to suffer with J.D. Vance quite a bit. I think the two just clash personality-wise. It's going to be a rough 4 years, and I hope that all the energy that was built in the lead-up can now be directed to protecting your communities, your neighbors, your friends, standing in solidarity with one another. You know, we survived 4 years before by doing that. We can survive another 4 years if we find community with one another and we stand with each other and we recognize that pain is often not meant to be experienced alone, but should be shared. And when it's shared, the burden becomes a little bit less. The burden becomes a little bit less difficult, that we can sort of collectively overcome what we individually struggle with. So that's my little spiel for anyone who's reeling for the past week. Other than that, it's actually been a good week personally, even if socially it was a disaster of a week. Mostly have been just dealing with a lot of travel. I'm happy to be back on the West Coast, the best coast, shamelessly, and enjoying the weather. Because let me just tell you, when you're on the East Coast, one day you're experiencing fall winter weather, the next day you're experiencing 80 degree humidity. It is not pleasant. So I'm very much enjoying the fact that I'm on the West Coast right now and looking forward to this topic because this is very near and dear to my heart. So I'm excited to chat with John St. Germain.
Yeah. Well, John St. Germain has just leaped into the chat and posted a very inspiring message. Welcome to the show, John.
Welcome, welcome. Oh, it's great to be back with you guys, you know.
Yeah, we miss your regular radio shows, I'll tell you.
I'm considering bringing it back now more than ever. We know.
Well, you know, you told that to me about a year ago. And for those, again, who are new here, and there are always new people, John is the longtime voice of the Crystal Silence League and host of the Crystal Silence League Hour, which we are running in syndication, but eventually we'll get to the end of those old shows. And we really hope you will take up the old
torch.
The torch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's been going on in your world?
Oh, you know, we've been reassessing things, you know. Turn of events, this political turn of events, didn't come as a surprise to many of us. I hoped for the best, but there's a lot of polls and stuff, and you can't trust them. I kept an eye on what Jeremy and I looked at was the Las Vegas odds makers, and they've not been wrong in the last 100 years about predicting these results. I think they were wrong maybe twice in the last 100 years, and they had the odds on Trump 5-4. And right before the election, it went 5-3. So it was pretty much certain that Donald Trump was going to grab this. But I do believe that what has happened as a result of this, I have seen rising a grassroots movement of people coming together in groups that I've not seen since the 60s, where grassroots movements are rising up. And of course, what has happened is that, once again, this has given people of low character permission to act out, right? And this is what we're seeing, right? Once again, the loud mouths and the people with poor impulse control and the people who want to beat their chest and say... Embolding them in the worst way, bringing out the worst in people. But also it's bringing out the best in people. And so we know what to expect this time, right? Forewarned is forearmed. And so I feel a great flame of hope inside of myself that this time we're not complacent. And we saw wonderful things happen in the 60s that brought people together in spite of great darkness, not only on the grassroots level, you know, people that were trying destructive things, but we also saw it on the governmental level. I mean, come on, J. Edgar Hoover, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Some of the things he did in terms of disinformation. I feel a great flame of hope that on the grassroots level, the people coming together, we can carry this. Whatever comes up, we can carry it. And
I'm going to put in a qualified amen on that. The qualification is that many people who I would have thought, given their youthful energy, would have been part of a grassroots movement, allowed what I'm going to just outright call agent provocateur, Russian, yeah. Chinese, Iranian, you name it, propaganda to divide and split them. And they didn't get it. And so we have these people who have become very, very... I guess the word is divide. Yeah, well, it's more than polarized because there's more than one pole. It's people are embattled in their little camps, and it's I'm not going to name them all because many of them are friends, and some of them don't won't speak to me. You know what I mean? Whereas we used to have a sort of a broad coalition of humanism and morality, justice, civil rights, these kinds of things. It has become very, very divided. It's the same thing that happened when the civil rights movement became divided and went. Part of it went violent and part of it stayed nonviolent, and then it all fell apart. We have been done, and we need to look at this seriously. Why did we let it happen? Why did we allow outside agitators, is what I would call them, to break us apart? And so we need to talk about this with our colleagues. But it may be that we can never rebuild it, the kind of coalition we had in the 60s. That's why I said a qualified AM, amen. I'm hoping because, but I was hoping all along that people would come together. And I could see it happening when Kamala had a vice presidential candidate like Tim Walz, you know. You could see the feeling, the energy there. But it was, it's been hard, and I just don't know what to say exactly. I'm hoping for the best. So amen.
I think you're right. The social media doesn't help at all, right, in some ways. No. I mean, we talk about social media as being a really good communicator, but it actually creates these really bad silos of knowledge. And something I was talking about with my colleagues is, so you can see sort of generational divides that are happening, right? But also you can also see communities pop up in social media. And some people have media literacy, let's call it what it is, right, Kat? Like the ability to actually read something and go, this does not seem right. This doesn't seem logical. This doesn't seem accurate. And others who sort of fall into these traps. And one of the things that we're seeing is like people like Elon Musk and whatnot are able to weaponize that really, really well.
Oh, yes.
So that you can. So, I mean, one of the things that heartens me is that Trump hasn't actually increased his share of votes from last year or even from 2016. Mm-hmm. So it's the same group of people coming out to vote. But what he's able to do, and this is what you're talking about, Kat, I think you're right on the money here, is he's able to leverage that the bad actors and the provocateurs, the bad agents, that bad information stuff to really like milk the anger and outrage of that group he's got so that they come out in huge droves. So one of the things that we saw is the fact that in a lot of these places that he won, they still sent Democratic senators to Congress. So it's like, well, how did that happen? Because they literally went in, his people went in, voted for him and walked out. They didn't even vote for senator. And that's an example of like these low information, bad information. And of course, it can be weaponized by outside agitators and also people like the really wealthy, like Elon Musk, who owns Twitter and X. Who's able to manipulate that, right? And you get certain stories. Right. Someone remarked the other day that if you watch Kamala Harris's tweets, you can see them being throttled in real life, where her numbers drop. And even though she has like tens of millions of followers, for some random reason, you'll see that she'll only get like 1,000 retweets. And that's an example of someone using that platform to make sure that good information doesn't get out, only bad information gets out. And so the coalition becomes weaker because the opposite side becomes riled up, right? And
they get
information weird, like, what are you even talking about, right? I mean, I actually heard an interview, I don't know if you two saw this, where a woman said she voted. So the primary groups that voted for Trump were white men and white women. Black voters, other voters all tended to vote Kamala Harris. But if you listen to this interview, and I'll send it to you, it's a woman, and she says she voted for Trump because Trump will protect abortion. Like, what the F? Like, this is radically the opposite of what he says.
Right. It's, you know, I'm just going to say one more thing about this, and then we're going to move on to our actual topic for today. But I just have one more thing to say, which is, The day that Elon Musk bought Twitter, I quit, disassembled my account, hosted all, it's gone. I was part of a small coterie of maybe 200 people that I know that did this. And they're mostly people my age. If there are people under the sound of my voice who are still part of it, you have to start thinking, why are you putting money in the pocket of a man who supports, well, all of the terrible things that he supports, racism, elitism, you name it. The guy is not a good person.
Eugenics,
oh yeah, everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy is really a terrible person. And he's just beyond belief. He's much more intelligent than Trump and going to be the puppet master if J.D. Vance gets...
Too.
Yeah, if J.D. Vance gets in, they all are going to lean on him because he has all the money in the world. So please, if you can, bring yourself to just get out of X, get out of Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Just leave it. It's toxic and it will not do you any good. Go out with friends who are living in a more wide open form of social media, which I'm not even sure that Zuckerberg is Facebook Meta thing is that wide open. One of the things that seems to me to be fairly wide open of all places is YouTube. You can find YouTube channels that have very lively comment sections where people are constantly, you get to know the people in those comment sections. It's a little bit like the old days of Usenet. You just find them and you go, oh, it's you again. You know, you know who they are. And there are some good conversations there. So that's all I have to say about that. I would like to go on to our topic because we don't want to cut ourselves short here. So today we're going to be talking about the development of mediumship or mediumship training. And as always, I like to introduce these things, so get us sort of focused a little bit. So mediumship is generally described as the ability to communicate with the dead and with spirits generally, but mostly mediumship developed out of the spiritual churches, started in 1848, and the idea there was to communicate with the dead. Other things have been added over the years, and there are spiritualists who communicate with angels, for instance, but others who do not. And there are ones who communicate with deities and so forth. But if you just take mediumship to be communicating with the dead, you have a great field of cultural divergence and intertwinement there. Some people only contact their own families or those of their town or place. Others are very interested in contacting wisdom teachers of the past. Some contact spirit guides who were spiritual leaders in life but now have become spirit guides to a whole movement of people. And in the spiritualist churches, there are several ways that this kind of mediumship is conducted. Usually in spiritual churches, it's called message bearing. And I need to now make a little footnote. Spiritualist churches, what are those? So spiritualist churches are any kind of a religious organization that believes that you can communicate with spirits. And there are some that grew out of previous religions, such as Christian spiritualism or Jewish spiritualism or eclectic spiritualism. There's Espiritismo or Mexican spiritualism, which is partly Jewish, partly Catholic, and partly indigenous Mexican. There's Espiritismo Cartacista or Cartas Espiritism, which grew out of the teachings of a guy named Allan Kardec, whose real name was Leon Denizard Revel, and he wrote some books on mediumship in French, which got translated into Spanish and became very popular among Afro-Caribbean practitioners, especially in Cuba, Puerto Rico as well. Then there's Espiritismo Cruzado, which is eclectic Afro-Cuban spiritualism, in which there are things from Cardicism, things from Africa. And cruzado here does not necessarily mean the cross as in Christianity, but it means crisscrossed, like a crossroads, and so it's eclectic. And then there's another one called Santerismo, which is a variation of Espiritismo cruzado that developed in Puerto Rico and in Dominica and is popular in New York City in particular. So all of these different ways of practicing mediumship in these religions are modified by what the people believe in their religion. There also is mediumship without religion, but that's more difficult to get into because it is more wide open to fraud and the entering in of mentally ill people because there is no hierarchical organization to vet them. And I don't mean to put down any, non-churched mediums, but in a way, having a church around you does provide some sort of a safety net better than just going to a spirit medium who you find online. So having said all of that, in the spiritualist churches, especially the ones that grew up in the United States, there are what are called development circles. And these are weekly or monthly, and they have an experienced member who's a medium as a guide or teacher. And there are guided lessons or group work, and you learn how to become a medium. And once you become good at it, you'll usually be invited to be a message bearer in your church. And some of them also carry out other forms of psychic training, not just mediumship, but they might also do ancestor work, angel contact, spiritual healing, aura perception, kinesiology, meditation, astral travel, psychometry, and so forth. And I, when I was young, was part of a development circle like this, and we did all of those except for angel work. I don't think we did angel contact, but we did all the others in our development circle as well as mediumship. And then some churches have home circles, and home circles are mostly in areas where there aren't that many spiritual churches. They will meet in someone's home, and these are small groups. They may have a lot of social support and strengthening in the home circle, but they also will do group book readings on famous mediums or techniques of mediumship. They will do knowledge sharing, what they did, and they will do collaborative message sharing, message bearing, where people bring messages in from spirit and other people kind of say, yes, that's kind of right, but there's a little something wrong here, and kind of help people fine-tune their expectations about how where they're going with it. One of the things that home circles also have that you don't usually see in development circles is dream interpretation. People just bring in their dreams and have the group interpret them. And they also will do mental or spiritual healing with or without laying on of hands or touch or prayer. So that's my intro to development. What we're talking about is we all know of great mediums, great spirit mediums, but how do you become one? And before I turn this over to John, I just want to say one more thing. We're doing this show partly because I have a client who has mediumship gifts and talents. And she joined a series of, I think at this point, three different Afro-Caribbean groups, different, I don't want to get into who they are, what they are, but they're all in California. And each of them has a house medium, I guess is what I would call that person. And she was discouraged and even told she could not become a medium, that the house has one official medium. Now, this may be true in those particular houses. I don't think it's true in all of them, and I think the Conjurman will talk about that. But in, and especially it's not true in Cardicist Spiritism. But what she was going through caused me to say to her, why don't you go outside of these groups and go to a group that actually gives training in mediumship? And this was hard for her to conceive of because the nearest group to her that gave that kind of training is pretty much an all-white, old-school American spiritualist church. She felt kind of out of place there, and I have been encouraging her. So I just wanted to talk about how do you get training, and I'm going to recommend that she hears this show. So I'm going to turn this over to you, John. Sorry for the long introduction, but there's a lot to cover here.
Well, how much time do we have? You know, if we had months, we could really go into it. Well, you know, there's formal training. There's spirit camps, you know, Camp Chesterfield, Camp Lilydale, et cetera, where
Casadaga, they, yeah.
Casadaga, yeah, where you can go and get training, like going to a university, right? But also, there is a lot of informal training. I think what a lot of people aren't aware of is that when spiritualism was a big rage, right, when Andrew Jackson Davis and the Fox sisters joined forces, right, and it became a rage. People know about the famous mediums, right, the Fox sisters, Eusebia Palladino, but what a lot of people don't realize is this was a grassroots movement. There were hundreds of thousands of people practicing mediumship in their home, right? They had spirit circles. They were doing readings with alphabet cards, teacups, planchettes. So, and then there were all these newspapers and newsletters that were going around. People subscribed to them. You can still find them, you know, and collect them and read them, and they gave instructions. So, and there were witnesses. There were people that were writing into these and saying, here are my experiences. Yes, we tested this, and it worked. Imagine a religion that doesn't just promise you, okay, someday, yeah, you'll die, you'll go to heaven, et cetera. Imagine a religion that you could test. You could test. It says, okay, yeah, you die, you go into an afterlife. Well, how do you know? Well, we're testing it. We're communicating, you know, with our deceased son that died in the war. You know, our child who died of Spanish influenza, we talked to them. And so there were guidelines that were laid out, protocols. You knew what to do. You didn't just dive in and say, well, I'm getting voices in my head. There were protocols. And they were laid out in Andrew Jackson Davis's book, The Great Harmonium, and others. Most of the things that we think of, the Happy Summerland, the spirit circles, the table test, things like that, that we talk about to this day, Andrew Jackson Davis wrote about. So there are things that you look out for, dangers you look out for, tests you look out for. Many of the earliest mediums were trained to have a spirit guide, or what was known as a control. And this is a spirit of someone that you knew in life who passed on. You know, Marjorie, the medium, had her brother Walter. Arthur Ford had his son. Many of the mediums have someone they knew in life that they could test. And as I talk to a lot of people, and I say, you have to test your spirit. And you ask the spirit something that only that, like if it's your Uncle Fred, you ask them questions only Uncle Fred would know. And if they, you know, if they answer correctly, then you know you're talking to Uncle Fred and not some trickster spirit or some malicious spirit that will trick you. So getting the training can be formal or informal. And there are tons of spiritualist circles. There are people who will take apprenticeship. In my family, we, gosh, we had a line of spiritualists that went back, I know, at least to my great-grandmother and probably before on my mother's side. And on my father's side, there were spiritualists. And sadly, my great grandmother Vressie, that's V-R-E-S-S-I-E, was put in the state mental hospital where she died because she spoke to invisible people by family members. And she's in a unmarked grave. That's what they did with mental patients who died in the state mental hospital. She's a numbered grave, and my son thinks he may have tracked down her numbered plot. He thinks he has. We're going to go over and try to spiritually connect with her. The because there's hundreds of these graves in a unmarked field, and we're going to try to find her. The in the '60s and '70s, it was dangerous. If you were known to talk to spirits or talk to people, you could go to the mental hospital, and you could also be lobotomized for such things. So a lot of the spirit mediums where I live did it on the down low, very secretly. There were dangers involved in this, but yes, you can get formal or informal training. In my case, when I was very young, I remember being maybe 4 years old, and I was very close to my grandfather, whose name was John Taylor, and I was named after him, Johnny, and I was called Johnny, and we were very close. I just adored him, and one night, I remember having a stomach ache, and he came in and he rubbed my stomach until I went to sleep. And the next morning, I told my mom and my grandmother about it, and they looked at each other and they said, "Well, Johnny, it had to be a dream." I said, "Oh, no. He came in and he rubbed my belly and he talked to me and he sang to me and I went to sleep." And they said, "Well, Johnny, we didn't really want to tell you about this, but your grandfather died last night." And I said, "Well, what is that?" And I said, "Well, remember your little hamster Pinky when he died, we put him in a cigar box and buried him, and we told you he went to heaven. That's what it means to die." I said, "Are they going to put Grandpa in a cigar box and bury him?" And I didn't have a concept of it, right? But then we went to the funeral, and I said, "Oh, they did put him in a box and bury him." And so that was my first introduction that there might be something different to parts of a person, but I had no concept of it. And then later on, I had some other experiences, and of course my family did too. But it's like, how do you explain to a kid, about the thing? And then later on in first grade, I said to my first grade teacher, I said, "Your lights today are different." She said, "Why?" I said, "Usually your lights are yellow and green. Today they're red." And she got me by the ear and took me to the office. This is the day when they made you pray in school, right? And it took me to the office, and my principal read Bible to me and called my mom, and my mom took me aside very seriously and said, "You can't talk to people about things like this." And I said, "Why not?" And she goes, "Not everybody can do this." And I said, "Really?" And so I got trained up in the family, basically, and I remember doing exercises basically concentration sort of things, and being taught to do readings and things like this growing up. So for me, there was some formal training in the house, and I was introduced to some people. There was a guy named Wally, I remember, and a guy named Charles, and we had lessons like that, and there were circles in the house, and we did a thing called psychometric mediumship, where you held objects belonging to people, right, and you described the owner, and the people who knew about him would tell you how right or wrong you were.
That's right. I used to belong to this development circle that was led by a woman. I've mentioned her name a number of times, Leah Minda Andandian.
Yeah.
And we would do sending and receiving, and we would if you're wrong, you were wrong. She wouldn't, she didn't sugarcoat it. It was like I was sending, I was sending blue, and anyone who said blue, raise your hand, and anyone who said some other color, you know, let's just wipe it out, and we're going to try again. And she would get, she could actually raise the number of correct answers just by going around, just round and round. We did another thing which I want to mention real quick, and then I'm going to turn that over to Conjuran, because his experiences are very different than ours. We also started with some very simple touch. So the development circles come out of the spiritualist seance world, and in seances, usually people hold hands. And we would sit in chairs, and the picture that was used for the placard to announce this show shows a bunch of people sitting in chairs holding hands. And we would start with holding hands, and we would, of course, say who we were and how we were doing, kind of a check-in thing. And then we would start moving that energy. Someone would start squeezing one hand, and then you go to the next hand, and you just do it as start off sort of slow, and it would get very, very fast. And you could get to the point where you knew where the energy was in the circle. And when we really felt that, we were like in tune. And then the Amanda would start the lesson. But she would never start it without us first having done this sort of passing of the energy around the circle a number of times. And seeing that photo of that circle is very reminiscent of the way we were. There were about a dozen of us, is what it looks like in that picture. And passing the energy around was kind of interesting because sometimes people would goof and break it, and everyone would know it had broke. We'd all laugh out loud at once. We could tell that it had broken. And it was a good idea on how to get sort of neurologically entrained with one another, and then we would do our sending and receiving, and then we would do our mediumship, and whether it was channeled medium or ship or whatever it was going to be. So that was the kind of training that I received, and that was a home circle. So I want to ask you, Conjurman, because what John told me is something very special. He's gifted and was born in a gifted family, but still I've got this client who she just wants to be a medium and feels she has some gift for it, but it's not a family thing. Now, you also come from a family of gifted mediums, right?
Oh, yeah, a very old school family of mediums and diviners and oracles that stretches back quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my family tradition is actually involved spiritual training at a very young age, dream interpretation, bibliomancy, mediumship, very, very early on, probably quite unusually so. But the training sort of varies from culture to culture and place to place. But one thing that you do find quite common, both in the ATRs and in spiritual traditions, is the idea of sort of grounding yourself, whether it's with like a physical object, it's sitting in a chair. Like the sitting in the chair is not a casual thing. You're not just sitting in a chair because it's comfortable. That's great, but you're actually sitting in the chair because the idea is that you're actually grounding yourself because you've planted 2 feet down on the ground. Another act of grounding is some type of physical object. So you often find that mediums will develop or have a physical object like a ring or a necklace or something that they can sort of thumb or hold in their hands, and that helps to sort of bring about a trance, but a controlled type of trance. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see this a lot. Like if you see Kardecian mediums, they generally will have some type of bracelet, a necklace, or a ring, and you'll see them sort of thumb it, or they'll sort of hold it and roll it in their hands a little bit. That's one way to have a sort of control, developing what we call controlled trances. Other people develop this ability through concentration exercises. And one concentration exercise is the lighting of a candle and staring into the flame of that candle. Now, you're not using the candle to scry, which is an entirely different process. It's sort of related, but a very different thing. With scrying, you're trying to see the future. You're trying to see something. With this, what you're trying to do is keep your focus entirely on that candle. And what this allows you to do is start to distinguish between your voice and the voice of spirit. That's one of the first steps necessary for a mediumship, is recognizing when you're actually hearing voices and when you're actually hearing your own voice. Once you start to develop, and it takes time, it does take time. Some people do it for like a week and they're like, I didn't hear anything. I've given up. I don't have the skill. No, sometimes it takes months. We trained a medium who stared for 6 months before they were starting to able to be like, okay, I can know when I'm speaking in my brain and now I'm starting to hear this other voice. And over time, they were able to find out that that was actually their great-grandmother who was speaking to them. But you stare into the flame as a way of concentrating your thoughts. Now, you don't have to use a flame. Other people use a rock. Some people use a pebble. Some people even stare into the water. So it's similar to scrying, but you're not trying to divine the future. You're not trying to see anything. You're trying to focus your thoughts. It's a concentration exercise. And I have found that that's very common in a lot of Afro-Caribbean, Espiritismo traditions, this idea of developing concentration exercises as the first step towards mediumship, so you can tell the difference between your voice and the voice of spirit.
Yeah, are you there? I heard a weird buzzing sound and then you stopped.
Yeah, my voice, I think I heard the same buzzing sound. But yeah, concentration exercises. I think, Kat, you've also talked about similar concentration exercises that you encountered, but maybe not with a candle, but this idea of focusing the mind in some way. Because trance comes in two forms, anthropologists talk about what are known as sober trances or meditative trances. These are trances in which you sink into yourself. This can generally be done through mantras, through the focusing of the mind, through relaxing, through particularly bodily exercises in which you focus on each of the part of your limbs, letting the limbs let go until the body is completely loose. That usually allows for certain spirits to quite literally enter into the body. Or you have what are known as ecstatic trances, which is you try to raise yourself up. And you can find this in the ATRs, where alcohol is consumed, cigarette smoke or tobacco smoke is smoked, and you dance and you sing and you sort of let your body go into the song and the music, and that induces a trance. So in either of those cases, though, the precursor to that is developing the ability to concentrate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now
I'm gonna jump in here with some stuff from the chat. Somebody was talking about scribbling on paper while in a channeled trance, and that is traditionally has a name, and the name is called automatic writing. And you people, there are people also who draw when doing that, but automatic writing is a really interesting way to receive messages. Not everyone does it or can do it. But I used to know a medium who did that in Missouri, and she was amazing. She would cover sheets and sheets of paper. She'd get up every morning, and this is the training that she had received, was when you get up in the morning, and this is very similar to the Crystal Silence League's training also, when you get up in the morning is when you do your spiritual work, and then you go about your day. And so she would get up and she would do automatic writing for at least a half an hour every morning. And what she would always ask is, what knowledge do I need for today? What will I see today? And she would just write on paper. It would just be, you know, shapes and words, whatever. And then she would look at it and try to read it and make sense of it, because she had had her eyes closed. It was just stuff that came through her. And I was knew about this because my then partner, husband, and I went to see her. We had been told by some mutual friends that she was looking for a good pedigree buck goat to breed her dairy goat nannies, and we had one, so we were going to go over there and see if we could arrange for her to work with our goat. So we drove up, and she said, oh, you're the people who I wrote about this morning. And I thought, oh, my crazy lady. And she brought out the sheets of paper. And it was, you know, the two people will show up and the man will have long curly hair. And I'm like, oh, I mean, it was very explicit. And she says, they will come about farm business. And of course we had. And it also said on it, the woman will have a head covering. And I had a bandana on my head. And so she had seen something very similar to what we were. And so I took time with her to learn about how she did it. I tried it. I had no talent for it, but she did it every morning, and she showed me whole books of her automatic writing, and she would also write on it, and this is what she was taught to do. She was an older lady, by the way. She was in her mid-60s when I was in my mid-20s. She would also write on it in a red pen to the side or over it or a circle parts of it, whatever came true. Because one of the things when you're doing mediumship of any kind, whether it's automatic writing or transmediumship, verbal expressions, you have to check yourself. Yeah. And otherwise, you know, you become in danger of going over the edge. And we don't want to see that happen. We want to see people who can live their life in the real world with the addition of mediumship rather than becoming, you know, psychiatric patients in an unfriendly society, and also use your mediumship for what you think it should best be used for. If it's only to be used for you and your family, that's fine. If you want to join a church or group and develop your mediumship, that's really a good safe place to do it.
I think that's a really good advice, and I think the you know, injunction towards safety or the advice towards safety is good. Something to bear in mind is that mediumship takes different forms, and there's different levels of mediumship. There's a sort of there's a channeling type of mediumship in which messages come through you. It can come through you in a variety of different ways. You might say something and be like, why did I say that? Or you might have a thought. Mm-hmm. Like, why did I think that thing? Or you might, in the case of this person, write something, right? That's a case of channeling, right? It's like your automatic writing is a form of channeling. The next level is what we call transmediumship, which is where you actually, part of your consciousness kind of blurs, right? You're in an altered state of mind. Channeling doesn't always require an altered state of mind. It can involve writing, right? But whereas in the case of a transmediumship, your mind does alter. In the African traditional religion, particularly in the Afro-Caribbean and Afro-Brazilian tradition, they often call this being in a state of two-headedness, in which your head is occupied by two spirits, your spirit and someone else's spirit. You don't fully lose consciousness, though. You're kind of working in tandem with one another, but you are in this altered state. So this state of two-headedness. And then the next is full possession, which not all mediums seek out and not all mediums are comfortable with, but some do actively seek it out. For example, in the tradition of voodoo, right, you are going to be fully possessed if you're a medium, meaning that you will lose consciousness, and for a period of time, that spirit or loa will govern your body and move through you and act through you. And you find the same thing in Umbanda and Candomblé and a variety of the different African diasporic traditions. But this comes to your comfort level, what you're comfortable relinquishing. And so know where you stand. Not all mediums seek full possession. Some mediums prefer the trance mediumship, and some mediums prefer channeling. Mm-hmm. All three are valid.
I'm going to say something here about two-headedness, which Pascal Beverly Randolph was a spirit medium, African-American spirit medium in the 19th century. He was born in 1825 and died in 1875. And he was a famous, what's called a platform lecturer. This is a person who stood on a platform, went into trance and delivered messages to the audience, and also delivered what I would consider to be channeled messages from dead philosophers. He, in particular, was known for channeling Plato. And people were highly impressed by this because he was born into slavery, self-educated, and they're like, God, this guy is channeling Plato. And it, from all accounts, it was spot on. So that was kind of cool. But
and
he,
a sex magician.
What?
And a sex magician, too.
Oh, and he was a sex... Oh, yes. He was a sex magician and a hoodoo root doctor. Forgot to mention that. Anyway... And he also was a sailor and went around the world. Anyway, he was a very, very interesting person. But he had a complete psychic and psychological breakdown around the year 1852 or so. He completely came apart. He became depressive. He became semi-suicidal. He could not get up on the lecture platform anymore. He couldn't do anything. And he just completely just fell into chaos. And consulted with other spirit mediums and other people, and he decided that because of his background and training, which was more African, that he was had fallen very naturally into an African style of working, which was which he referred to as voodoo, which was total transpossession. And he would come out of it and come off the stage, and he wouldn't even know what he had said for the last 2 hours. And he realized that he was not eating, not drinking correctly, his health was failing, his mind was failing, and he had to stop it. And so he stopped doing it completely. And then after a couple of years, he met with some other spiritualists who were English, and they said, you know, have you ever tried just lightly going into a lighter trance? And so he did, and he called it that, the blended state. He still knew who he was. Same thing as two-headed, only they, since they were English, they called it blended, right? He still knew who he was, and he could speak, and he could also pass his hand over his face and open his eyes, and he would be back where he wanted to be. He didn't have to just sit there until he woke up as out of a hypnotic trance. So this is something I think people should bear in mind. There are people who value total transpossession. They value it. It is the mark of a true experience. And there are other people for whom it can be very deleterious and if carried to extremes. So you need to learn who you are with respect to this. And I liken 100%. I liken it unto using drugs as or psychedelics, especially. Some people can do that and get really good information that way, and other people end up suicidal or locked up in a 5150 or whatever we call it, in California, 5150 involuntary psych hold. So,
well, I mean, your personality plays a big. You're right. Personality plays a big role, and there's certain personalities that full possession is not a good experience, right? It's the act of losing, because you lose consciousness. That is not always. That can be even traumatic, which is one of the reasons also why many of the ATRs use transpossession within the context of initiation. Only initiates become fully possessed, and even then there's a lot of guardrails. They're never doing it alone. It's in a community. Everyone's watching one another's psychic state and emotional state. So there's a context, so that safety matters a great deal. But it is an act. I mean, there's a reason why all the prophets of old talked about God in kind of terrifying ways, right? Because it's a real unusual encounter. Imagine not the idea that spirits are real, but knowing definitively that spirits are real and that one has taken over your body. For some, that's exhilarating. And for some, that is horrifying. So knowing your personality, having safety, and I think blended state or the two-headed state is far safer for a lot of people than full possession. Full possession, I really would recommend you have a teacher in that instance.
I'm going to throw in something here, too. I think there are genetic components here. There are people who can never go into a possession state, and I think they're genetically unsuited for it. Just to give, a parallel, but not saying that it's like drugs or alcohol, there are people who have one drink and become an alcoholic, and there are people who drink, fall asleep, and go, that was unpleasant, and never do it again, and there are people in between. And they have found that that is genetic. And I think that the ability to dissociate yourself deliberately, it may have a genetic component. I think we'll all find that out because, it's all genetic. Claimed Paradise says they don't allow you to get possessed if you aren't initiated. That is true in some places, but not all. Not all. That's what we're kind of talking about, having those guardrails. And in the spiritualist churches that I frequented, places like Lilydale and Casadaga and Camp Chesterfield, they do not usually encourage complete transpossession. Some people do it, but they don't encourage it because then you have a lot of caretaking to do with that person to get them back to normality again. And that's an important part. They usually have someone who helps them. Hmm. And that can be a little much. So everything's different. But Shiva asked, are there commonalities of training? Yeah, I think we've touched on a few. Using a focal point like a candlelight or a water like you would for scrying, but also holding something that belonged to the person. For instance, as a medium, I myself really am a psychometrist medium. I don't go into trance easily unless I'm holding or touching something that belonged to the person or looking at their photo, and then I just slip right in. It's just like, whoop, there it is. That is my gateway into the trance state. And for me, it's always blended anyway because I usually speak and know what I'm speaking while I say it. I'm not unconscious. But everyone's different, and you have to, if you can, meet with other people and see what they offer in the way of training. There's our bumper music. Oh, my gosh. Hemaganda says there is expanded consciousness training like the Monroe Institute. Yeah, I think that's maybe a slightly different thing. And author Valda, et cetera, long name, says so many people are using ayahuasca. Again, I don't think we want to go into that because that's a dangerous drug, actually, and it's more dangerous than most psychedelics, and it has created a lot of broken people. So just
I have heard horror stories.
I've had horror stories from clients that are really, really horrific. So I'm not going to recommend psychedelics as a way to have mediumship, and this is not about changing your conscious expansion, or consciousness losing. It's about contacting the dead. So let's keep our focus on that, is what we're really talking about training for. I think it's important to not just put it into a big smeary fingerprint of different colors. So I've said my piece, and I'm late, and now James will be here.
Thank you, Ms. Kat. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by Hoodoo Psychic. The first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go to the phones and talk to today's client. Our client is Miss Moody, calling from area code 631 in New York. Miss Moody, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome. And you said that you have not had anyone else read on this situation before. Is that correct?
Yes, it just happened recently last week.
All right. Thank you so much. And she writes, I took part in a cake competition November 2nd and 3rd in Pennsylvania. I won third prize, but I should have gotten first. I think the judges are friendly with the other competitors and choosing them based on favoritism. It was extremely disheartening for me to witness this. I am wondering if there is actually true or if I could have done something different to win. Turning it over to you, Ms. Kat.
All right. I'm going to actually turn this one over to Conjurman to do the reading, and then John will do a reading, and I'll give some root work. Hello, Conjurman. Uh-oh.
Conjurman just dropped off. I'm going to try to get him right back.
Okay. Meanwhile, we have someone's barking dog. Whose dog is that, Ms. Moody?
I'm sorry, it's my dog.
No, no.
Oh, okay.
Well, while we're waiting for Countryman to come back, what's the name of your dog?
His name is Pluto, like the planet.
Oh, Pluto.
Oh,
nice. Pluto pup. And what breed is he?
He's Havanese.
Havanese. Well, he has a very appropriately small bark. Havanese are small dogs. Have we gotten Countryman back?
I'm back, yes. I got dropped.
He's a small dog with a big name.
Yeah, right. All right, take it away, Conjurman. You're going to do the reading.
Thanks, yeah. I got dropped by a blog talk who always hates me. So I'm happy to do your first reading here. I did miss if you said what your sign of the zodiac was.
Hello, Ms. Moody?
I'm sorry, I'm a Gemini.
You're a Gemini. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay, so we're doing mediumship this time around, so I'm going to do some mediumship as well. When I do mediumship, I have a particular crystal that I like to look into, and it helps me to sort of achieve a state and so that I can connect with the spirits that I work with, the entities that I work with the issues that I work with. And in particular in the Afro-Brazilian and Afro-care and the Afro-Brazilian tradition, this is a sort of black mirror that's placed in a horn that you can stare into, and it connects you with the spirits of the dead and the issues that are your allies. And so what I'm doing is I'm sort of staring into this and calling on to the spirits and the guides that I work with to see if they can reveal certain information for me, and I get a very strong indication that yes, there is favoritism here. There seems to be more than favoritism going on, but rather there seems to be some type of agreement is what is the indication. So there seems to be a contract, a formal agreement, some type of even communication. So that this has to actually go further. There is evidence that this was rigged. So it's not just you working out of nothing. There may be even a text that has been shared that shows that there's some type of rigging that has happened here. There's some type of communication, some type of evidence that's being done that indicates that there is some funny business, as we'll call it, some funny business. There isn't a lot you can do to get the prize, but there is a case for sort of retribution here. A case for getting the judges to either lose their position, lose their authority, or to be exposed. And I'm sort of signaling here to Kat, whichever workings she should be thinking about here, because what spirit is indicating is some type of exposure work, like expose them for who they are, expose the truth for what they are. So balance isn't going to be fully met here. You're not necessarily going to get this prize. You're not necessarily, there's not going to be sort of a, you know, reparation that, oh, we're so sorry, this is wrong. Here's your first prize, or here's, you should win this. That doesn't seem like it's going to happen. What you can do is expose the truth of this. There is some type of evidence there. It's not just that there's favoritism. There's an actual agreement. There's an actual conversation that has happened. There's an actual communication that has happened. So any type of working that you do should be about revealing that communication, getting that text to be dropped, getting screenshots to be shown. That will work in your favor in this instance. Is this involved, what type of competition? Does it involve animals of some sort?
No, it's a cake competition.
Cake competition? Okay, good. The animals are far trickier because there's a lot of personalities and individuals involved. Yeah, you're not going to get first prize, or you're not going to get sort of a recognition of things moving up. But what you can do is get retribution in this instance. There is some type of communication that you can expose. My recommendation here would be working with, if the competition is at a particular location, the entities that I'm working with indicate that there is land spirits readily available that can bring justice to this matter, that there are entities involved in that region that can help. If the competition is named after someone, or if there's a founder, you can invoke that spirit as well. But the land spirits in particular are going to be really useful here to invoke. Land spirits are entities that exist throughout regions. They can be invoked. Some of them are elemental. Some of them are spirits of the dead. They're associated with physical geographies. And those physical geographies, tapping into them, they have governance over these areas. So wherever this location is, if, for example, there's a headquarters, the land spirit is where you're going to be invoking. And Miss Cat can walk you through that. So the answer here, just to summarize, is yes. There was pink business. There was messages. You were, this was stolen away from you in some way.
Uh-oh. Conjurman. Is he gone again? I think he is. Ah, okay.
You know, there's a Pluto retrograde, so, you know.
And we have a little Havanese dog on the line named Pluto.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's see. How are we doing for time? Why don't we pass this over to you, because we're actually just on the mark for you to take up the reading, John.
Okay. hey, Rebecca. You know, I know you were on social media.
Yes.
Yeah. How are you? I don't know if I've ever explained how I do readings. I read the cards, and it's spirit driven. You know, without spirit, I'm just a guy with a deck of cards and some candles. I have no native talent as a reader. My readings are spirit driven, so I am reading just a deck of cards and see where spirit guides me. And then if I'm wrong, the spirit of my great-grandmother, Madeleine St. Germain, who I named myself after, tells me I'm wrong in very direct terms. So what I'm going to tell you, I have the Nine of Clubs, Ten of Hearts, Queen of Clubs, Jack of Clubs, and Seven of Diamonds. This is very interesting because if you see 9-10 Queen Jack, 9-10 Jack Queen, you've got almost a straight here, right? And if you had a king, you would have won. So I believe you should have won. But what is this Seven of Diamonds? Well, that's cursed money. You know, seven is misfortune, not fortune. It's cursed money. Was there a cash prize in this contest?
There was one cash prize, yes.
Well, I think that whoever won and the judge or whoever made this determination, they were in cahoots. Money passed hands. I think it's not only just cahoots, friendship, et cetera. I think money passed hands. I think this was very dastardly. Seven of Diamonds is basically cursed money. So I think money passed hands. So if I don't know if an investigation can be made, but you know, this wasn't just merely friendship or nepotism or collusion or favoritism. It's very clear with 9, 10, Jack, Queen that you should have won. If you had a 8 here or a king, that'd be a straight. You know, if you were in Vegas playing Texas Hold'em, you take the bank. You should have won. Very clear. Spirit's very clear here. Spirit came through very clear here. And if I do I do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but I don't have time to do all of that. But if I do a second one and see what Spirit has to say about it, there's Ace of Clubs, 8 of Hearts, 9 of Hearts, and Queen of Spades. You know, we got 8 of Hearts and 9 of Hearts. I think that your cake was loved by many people. Ace of Clubs shows you did good work, but Queen of Spades, you know, Queen of Spades is that somebody was evil. So there was an evil person there who interfered with it. There was basically, yeah, you should have won, but you didn't. There was a money thing. The person was bought. The person who actually won, robbery, money exchanged hands, and it could have been the prize money was, or if there was a prize money, something exchanged hands, money exchanged hands. I am pretty sure of it. Now, I don't advise people to base major decisions based on a card reading, but my goodness gracious, it sure does look like it. So basically, in a nutshell, that's my reading.
All right. Well, this is interesting to me because I had that feeling and you both confirmed it. So I'm going to go to your part of your original question. Is there anything I could have done? And I'm looking at this and not seeing that you could have. That just doesn't, I know that's sort of sad to say, but I don't see how you could have changed it. And you can't go back in the past. So I'm going to give you some ideas of what I do in a situation like this to increase my odds. I would advise against getting involved with those people again. They have a lock on it. It's a done deal. And I don't know that, I mean, you might be able to pull something off, but I really have a feeling that that's kind of a lost opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So what would I have done if I had some feelings about that? I would have gotten something to represent each one of the judges. Now, probably their name, their photo off of social media. And I would have literally made whatever I was doing for the cake. Was this a decorated cake where you frosted it? Was that the competition?
Yeah. It was actually a sculpted cake. It was a sculpted cake of a mermaid.
Okay. So I would have used the same cake recipe and made a bunch of little small cupcakes. And I would have one of these people's photos into each cupcake. I'd make really small ones. You could, if you, you know, I don't want you just like, because it's a sculpted cake, I'm not talking about cutting pieces of the big cake away and then sticking their name in it. I'm talking about starting from scratch and baking them into little bits. And you could use, you know, like a cupcake tin, but just fill it only really partially. You just want to bake their picture and their name into their little cake, right? Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. Then when you're doing all of that frosting and all of this, if you're going to treat these little cupcakes as if they were just the most special little cupcakes in the world, and you're going to eat them one by one. In other words, you control and take over. If it's too many cupcakes to eat, get your kids or your friends. We're going to eat them all. You see what I'm talking about here? It's very similar to some court case spells where you have a tongue and you put the person's name in the tongue and then you cook the tongue and eat it. Not too many people use that spell anymore because they would rather put the tongue in the freezer or do something that's, or use pieces of paper and tap water or whatever they're going to do. But the older spells, you would eat that tongue. And I learned this from a lady who did this for people. She was a court case worker, specialist, you could say. And she would, she had a teenage son, and they would eat the tongue together because it was too big for any one of them to eat. And they'd eat it all up, gobble it all up, and I'm chewing on the prosecutor, and I'm chewing on the judge, and I'm chewing on juryman number one and juryman number 12 or whatever. They would eat them all up. And when they were done eating them up, they had controlled the court. So this is based on that spell. And I think you might want to give it a try if you enter another contest. And you could even have one for the logo of the organization, you know, if it's the downtown Bakers of, you know, wherever you live, just, you know, get their logo or design. Make those special. Make them pretty and then eat them, okay? You know, not every hoodoo spell involves the Psalms or involves herbs or anything like that. I wouldn't add anything to the recipe, just exactly the recipe that you're making to decorate for your cake. That's what I would do as a way to make it work in your favor. Now, you could go a little farther if you wanted to. You could put a little candle on each cupcake, and you could dress that candle with controlling oil, for instance, and you could burn it. But I would use birthday candles, not big candles, right? We're just talking about little birthdays. And, of course, you make your wish and blow it out. That would be another add another layer of work to it. But really, the idea here is to get them inside of you so they can't go anywhere else. And then you're just going to grind them up and digest them and poop them out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Now, you can still do that with these false judges that bothered you this time. You could still do it if you want to. And if you wanted to, since now we don't have the possibility of winning here, but we have the possibility of vengeance, you could add a little bit of this or that to the batter. But I wouldn't make it so that you couldn't digest it, because you don't want to stir up, you know, you don't want to put a lot of chili pepper in it, because then it would hurt your own digestion. But you could put a little bit of this or that or the other in it, as long as it was edible. And just make yourself what's called a dumb supper. Now, what's a dumb supper? A dumb supper doesn't mean you're stupid. It means you're dumb, as in deaf and dumb, meaning you don't talk. So it means that when you make those, you do not speak.
Oh.
And that includes do not play music. And if you want to really go whole hog into the dumb supper aspect of it, you work with your offhand. So if you're right-handed, you mix everything with your left hand for them, not for your cake, but for them. And you mix everything with your left hand, and you stir it counterclockwise instead of with your right hand clockwise. And you do it all in silence. Okay? And some people even will say, when you put the things in the oven to bake, you do it with your hands behind your back and slide it in backwards. Okay, that's a dumb supper. And it's a real exercise in concentration of your magical art, believe me. So, All right.
I'm just going to add one real quick thing for exposure.
Sure.
It's an old school working. What you can do is take the number, particularly because this is already over, take the name of all the judges, put them in a pot with water and salt, and then put it to a boil. And what this does is it exposes people who are false. Salt is a way of purifying, and the heat will bring heat upon them. So they'll actually expose themselves and get caught up in whatever scheme they've got, whatever agreement messages and money exchange that John saw in that case. So put all their names, write their names on pieces of paper, put those pieces of paper in a pot, water and salt, and bringing it to a boil.
That's a real good one, too. Thanks for mentioning that, Conjurman. I had overlooked that, and that's a really good way to work. All right. I hope we've helped you, and I hope you go on to glorious wins with a different venue. All right. Now we come to the lovely tritone of network identification, followed by many words.
LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Monday, November 11th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with myself and Reverend Art will be a rebroadcast of one of our favorite shows. And Tuesday, November 12th on the Crystal Silence League in syndication with John St. Germain will be the topic of The Way of the Elders, Part 4. And Tuesday, November 12th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of The Fae. And Wednesday, November 13th, on the Now You Know Show and syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of A New Segment and Vic's VapoRub. And Thursday, November 14th, at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Boyce will be the seasonal rebroadcast on the topic of Honoring Our Dead. And next Sunday, November 17th, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman will be Brother Christopher on the topic of legal magic. And now it's time for our pre-spell segment from our special guest, John St. Germain of johnstgermain.com in Knoxville, Tennessee. Take it away, John.
Okay. This is a ceremony or a ritual to purify an area where you intend to perform mediumship. It purifies the area and banishes any sort of evil spirits or negative energies, which is fairly essential. It's fairly essential. So you're going to grind into a powder. You're going to make an incense, right? You're going to grind into a powder the following ingredients: cinnamon, ginger, star anise, white sage, green cardamom, black pepper, sandalwood, nutmeg, and cloves. And you're going to burn this as an incense. And you fan this throughout the area you plan to use for your mediumship session to banish all these evil spirits and negative energies. Now, I want to tell you, I learned this from a Tibetan adept when I lived in Bloomington, Indiana, who performed these banishment rituals for his clients. It's very similar to a formula for a traditional Tibetan ghost banishing incense. And the adept who taught it to me suggested that you cut the air with a thurba, which is a ceremonial dagger or a dorje, while you pray to dark red Tara, Jigje Chenmo. And the mantra that you would recite while you're doing this is Om Tare Tutare Tore Sarve Bihani Bam Hong Fa Svaha. Now, a Theravadan practitioner, which is the gateway into Buddhism that I practice, might recite Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arhato Samma Sambuddhassa, which roughly means homage to the Blessed One, the Worthy One, the Arhat, the fully enlightened Buddha. This is a ritual that no evil spirit, no malignant energy can tolerate.
Uh-oh, got silence again. Is that it?
Oh, that's just me. I'm waiting, you know, for input.
Oh, well, we're loving it. Keep going.
Mm.
I think it's great. You know, doing that kind of work to prepare yourself is something that people don't think about. And, you know, you have a lovely way of intoning all of that Asian language stuff, man. You're really good at it.
I'm back. I got knocked off for just a moment. Maybe I should burn some of that incense here.
I think we're all, we're having this little Pluto.
Blog talk is a disaster.
Yeah, Blog Talk is falling apart. But, you know, this is when you talk about doing this, and of course now your method of doing it is unique to you, but that is something we do need to talk about, is how rooms are prepared for spiritual mediumship. Do you have any ideas along this line, Conjuran?
Yeah, I mean, preparing a room is pretty old school for mediumship. It depends on which tradition you come from. In some traditions, it involves clearing out a space, right? That is to remove all negative energy, to drive it away. But in other traditions, you actually invite the spirit in. And one way you can do it with both, that both clears out the negative and draws in the good spirit, is a cup of water and a cup of althea. The cup of water acts filtering agent and removing all sort of negative energy within the room, and the cup of althea or a bowl of althea will draw in helpful or good spirits. Placing both on any sort of surface before you do mediumship is actually quite useful.
That's a really good one. Althea can also be made into tea, but usually people just put up the althea root or the althea herb in a bowl dry, and that is to invite spirits in. So that's a good way to work. I like to also spend a little time lighting a candle. Even if you're not going to be using the candle, it's sort of almost a cliche or trope that mediums tend to like a candle, and they tend to like dim light. Now, development circles are often done in full light, either natural light outdoors or artificial light. But once you are in a mediumship position, dimming the lights a little will help. And I'm not talking about a dark seance, but I'm talking about just, you know, whatever kind of curtains you have, just close them a little bit. And you can do it in the day. You don't have to do mediumship at night by candlelight. That's just a movie idea. But you can do it better sometimes if you just have a little bit of darkness over your eyes. There are many mediums who will put a blindfold over their eyes to block out light, not a full, complete, you can't see blindfold, but just like a handkerchief or something, just to dim the light a little bit. I think that's a good way to work. However, again, there's always pluses and minuses. People who you're doing psychometry, you cannot cover your eyes, and that's why we would say just have the room light down a little bit. For instance, if you have installed a dimmer switch, you can get them at any hardware store, and just make it so that you can dim the lights just slightly in your room. It helps. All right. Okay. And another thing, I just have to mention that there were people interviewed by Harry Hyatt who were mediums, and one of them, Myrtle Collins, said you should have a head covering on, because she did that to keep evil spirits off of her head while she was reading. And I've always done that. Works for me. All right, there's our music. There's our music. So we're going to bring Reverend James back, and he's going to do our closing announcements, and then we're going to say goodbye.
Thank you, Ms. Captain Conjurman, and thank you, John St. Germain of johnstgermain.com in Knoxville, Tennessee, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest will be Brother Christopher of runeworker.com in California, bringing us the topic of legal magic. Once again, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Cat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman at conjurmanconsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FaultConjure.com in North Carolina. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at this same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you, James. Goodbye. Thank you for filling in for Papa Newt. I just have a couple more announcements to make here. I've been working on my weekly Patreon pages. If y'all want to support what I do, spend $8 a month and I'll have some money to do more pages for free. I like to do them. They cover all types of topics. This time we're on a little run of blues lyrics about root doctors, and I've been putting them through, and there's a couple more to come. And if you want to know about them, you got to join Patreon. They'll be released to the public later, but I do need a little support to keep this constant stream of web pages free to the public with support. And I know that Rebecca Moody, who we read for today, is one of my patrons. So big shout out on that. And thanks everybody for the help.
Good
All
night,
right. Then. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit Bartesian.com/cocktail. That's BARTESIAN.com/cocktail.